day, humans of the earth. You should know that I'm good at intros. welcome to Masturbators, the podcast. We talk about sex, masturbation, love, relationships, body image, mental health, vaginas, and the world. I'm here with Trisha Way.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
I'm very well, thank you. Yes, I'm very good.
Very good. I'm good. I've had a turbulent weekend, so my mind is boggled. So this is going to be an interesting episode.
We'll get through it.
Yeah. We'll do it. Because I'm here to keep things going, but I'm like, I don't know. What's up? What's down? What's happening? Why are we here?
Who am I? Why am I alive?
What's the point of... Yeah, exactly. The earth is dying. But we'll make it more jolly than that.
Yeah.
my new favourite thing. Have you seen the video? I think it's just called Earth by Little Dicky.
No, but I do know Little Dicky, so it's I can good. Only imagine.
I'll show you later. Everyone like. Now, and I think that whenever you watch on YouTube, money goes to charity. So everyone buy the song and watch the song, and it's got fun cameos, and it's about how this planet is nice, and we should be nice to it.
That sounds cute.
And it makes me really happy. It's like a summer song. And right now in London, freak accident, it's like 24 degrees.
Yeah.
In April.
Yeah.
Which is weird, but kind of cool. And then it makes like people go insane, I think.
Yeah, definitely. The sun comes out and then people forget how to like exist.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is, I think, what like triggered my weekend, which is like, sun!
Heat!
So yeah, so that's the wave I'm riding on. And we're here today, and this do not expect a linear conversation, because I don't think it's going to work. But we're sort of going to touch on polyamory, which I have all the questions about.
I don't have all the answers, but I've got some.
Of course. I'll be so happy with some. I'm like, I have no idea. I mean, I've had someone on the podcast before sort of trying to explain it to me. As well, okay. But I think different perspectives, because you know, she could talk about her perspective, and you can talk about yours. And I think, like, whether you're polyamorous or monoamorous, is that a thing?
Monogamous.
Oh, yeah. I think monoamorous is way more interesting. You probably all like everyone has their own perspective on their relationship.
Yeah, and also polyamory is like a subsect of non-monogamy. So it's not like you're either monogamous or polyamorous. It's like you're either monogamous or non-monogamous.
And then
polyamory is like, a subsect.
There you go. I already learned something. and then about your personal experience as a black woman.
Yes.
And the mental health.
One of those.
You are one of those. Ooh, yeah,
for those who can't see me, I am a black woman.
Podcast, so I pointed out.
Just to clarify.
Because you can't see what I see. And then mental health, which I know so much about. And I think it's important. Destigmatize and I think make people feel like they have access and they deserve access.
Yeah.
Taking care of it doesn't make you broken or,
Yeah, exactly.
Weird.
Yeah.
And we're all broken and weird.
Which we are.
Is the point of the podcast. It's about making people feel less alone.
Yeah. I'm sure we'll talk about sex at some point as well.
Vaginas, thing, masturbation.
Sex, toys, all that fun.
Toys. Let's talk about toys. Very nice. Well, see, this got... exciting. My favorite thing. Should we talk about that first?
Let's start with toys. Ooh. You know, give people an idea of what they're in for.
Okay. Yes, let's set the tone. Let's set the naughty, naughty tone. Tell me about your favorite. Have any favorite toys at the moment?
I just got a toy called the Satisfier.
That sounds fucking good.
And so, like, I think the first brand to do this particular kind of toy is it was called the Womanizer, but they're very
Is that the
clit sucking toys? But I got a Satisfier, and I got it off Amazon because it was on sale for £20, and I was like, you know what? I've been hearing such good things about this. I got £20. Let's give it a try.
Let's flash.
Oh my god. Okay. It's so good.
I'm just going to head note. This sounds fire on Amazon.
Yeah, I mean, I wish they were paying me for this.
Don't we all?
But legitimately, so intense. Like, very, very good. And it comes in, like, stages. So it starts off really gentle, and it's not actually suction. It's like very gentle vibration, because suction is
okay.
Suction can be dangerous for your little lady in the boat.
All right.
Just because of, you know, blood flow and all of that.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay.
So suction toys aren't bad, but you just have to be really careful with them, how much you use them, how intensely you use them, and making sure that, you know, you're not, like, busting blood vessels.
Yeah,
and all
fair
that
enough.
Jazz.
You don't want to do that to your little friend.
So this one's, like, gentle vibration that builds up in terms of intensity and speed as you change the settings.
Okay.
If you don't have one, I very highly recommend.
So is it like the cheaper version?
Yeah, it's like a knockoff. The womanizer is expensive. Right? The Satisfyer is not. So like the womanizer, I believe, is like over £100. The Satisfyer at full price, at least on Amazon, was £50. And obviously I got it for £20.
You got it on a sale. I need to add it to my basket and then just keep an eye on the... Sorry, I just unplugged my fridge because I think it might be making weird noises in the background. Or it's just a weird noise in the background. Anyway, we'll figure that out.
Just don't forget to turn it back on.
I know. It's like, why is everything... Okay.
Why is all my food terrible?
Oh, no. So, that sounds good. The Satisfyer Amazon.
Satisfyer. It's really spelled good. With a Y. So, S-A-T-Y. It's not suction, but it has a little suction cup. It looks like a little suction cup. And you just place that over... your little girl. And then you choose your setting, and it's waterproof, which is great, so you can use it in the bathtub.
Amazing.
It's also like hands-free, so once you've positioned it, you have both of your hands free.
Amazing.
Which is great.
And it stays in place.
And it stays. Oh. It stays. Definitely use lube, because that makes it all much, much better.
Yeah. Whatever you do in life, use more lube.
Always, yes, use more lube. Yeah. Normalize lube.
Yeah,
normalize lube.
It's so fucking important. It's my favorite. Yeah, lube. Like, whether you're playing with yourself or playing with others.
Yeah, normalize lube.
Have that lube with you.
Buy it. Love
Buy
it.
Buy it. Love it.
Have it.
Have it.
Use it.
Be it. amazing. Well, I'm very old school. Like, I found my toy... and I'm with it now.
Okay.
And it's called... what is it called? Palm Power? Have you heard of it? It's like a tiny version of the Hitachi.
Okay. Is that what I can see on the little box?
That's... Yeah, see, that's the problem when you're in a studio and you have only got one... Yeah, it's on top of my other new friend. And I've turned around because I realised that when it's the other way up, you can see him. He's called Roger, and he's a real feel dildo.
Oh, okay.
And I like him.
Has he got a suction cup?
Yes, he does. Obviously, like, I was like, I need this in my life right now. I've always wanted one, and it's gorgeous. Should I come go and get it?
Yeah, get Roger.
I'll go get Roger. I'll be right back. Back in action with Roger.
Interesting choice of words. Not that kind of action.
No. And I've got Roger on my lap. Ooh, and I've got... So this is my little friend. It's a Palm Power.
Oh.
It's got... you can add heads. Heads on it?
Yeah.
And sort of... Yeah, and it's varies in intensity, and the heads are in silicone, which I think is always important. To use silicon or non, what do they call it? Porous?
Yeah.
Toys? So, Roger, my new best friend with the suction cup and real skin feel technology.
Pink.
He's pink. He doesn't look like an actual penis because I don't know. I mean, there are people who like that.
Genitals are weird.
Yeah, I don't need them unless they're attached to a person to look real. But yeah, so this is Glorious Roger by So Divine, who I saw in Soho when, you know, you go window shopping and then you're like, oh, fuck it, I need this right now. So that's my... But I want the Satisfier. That sounds like a thing that I'm missing out on.
So fun.
Mm. Very nice, very nice. How often do you masturbate?
You know, I get too busy to masturbate.
Oh, London is the worst city to live
like,
in.
So busy. And I'm like, oh, you know, it'd be really good masturbating. And then I'm like, but do I have the energy? And the answer is normally no.
Fair enough.
I'm like, actually, no, let's do it. Then I get myself like in the mood, like, you know, I get everything all set up, like put my phone away so I'm not distracted. And then I'm like, oh, but I could just fall asleep.
I know what you mean. I know. Sometimes I'm lucky enough to dream sexy dreams and then come in my sleep, which is like, what, hitting one bird with two stones?
Yeah.
No, the other one. No, hitting two birds with one stone.
Killing two birds with one stone. hitting one bird with two stones.
That's overkill.
That's poor bird.
Yeah. It's just a smushed little bird. Why would we hit birds with stones in the first place?
I assume it's like a hunting thing.
But like, instead of a gun, you had a stone.
Well, like all the way back.
Oh.
All the way back.
Oh, fair
guess.
Enough, fair enough.
Or, like, I don't know, if you're, like, bashing a head in, and you're like, oh, there's two. I'm not sure. How do people prepare birds?
In the olden days? Yeah, I wonder if you would just have to bash their heads in, and then I guess you use a stone.
I don't know. This is
off topic.
If anyone knows the etymology of that phrase,
yeah, let us know.
Let us know. Solve this mystery.
I know, it's a big mystery. Yeah, I guess you get busy. I think sometimes I've actually talked about this on the podcast before, that I try to commit to myself more seriously.
Mm.
But you kind of let it slide, don't you, when you...
Yeah, I think it's just because, like, I'm a big crafter and I give myself loads of projects. So, like, currently, I'm in a show, and I was like, oh, we got an opening night card, like, everyone in the cast got an opening card,
yeah.
Opening night card from one of the cast members, and it was so cute. Yeah. I was like, oh my god, I want to get, like, press night cards. So, you're like, normal people, they're like, where can I find some nice cards, and I'll just sign them and give it to everyone. But no, not me. I was like, I'm going to make some cards.
Very good.
Not only am I going to make some cards, I'm going to make some 3D light up cards. And then also, I'm going to make some charms and also lavender scent bags.
Oh, wow. So you're going for it.
Literally, I'm so extra. It's unbelievable. So now, like, my house is just full of, like, card and stray LEDs and copper tape.
Oh, wow.
And like, it's really involved. Yeah. It's really involved. And then I'm like yesterday I stayed up until 3 o'clock in the morning cutting like little windows out of my house templates, and I was like, the day is gone.
Yeah, no, I can see how that happened. And we're back. Sorry, we had a little microphone situation and then I've given up, so we're back. And so basically you overdo your cards.
Just overdo everything in my life.
Do you think but you're not avoiding it, you just
no, never avoid it.
Now that you have to satisfy it, do you feel like you'll take more time out of your day?
I don't know, like it always, like, it depends. I think also just like with my mental health conditions, there are times that, like, I'm horny, but I don't want to have sex.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, thinking about sex is really great. Or thinking about masturbation is really great. But and then like, you go to do it, and it's like, oh, no, but I don't want this.
Yeah. I've had a weekend of that, literally.
Yeah.
Something very sexy happened on Friday. And I was like, well, that's fine. That's enough. Like, yeah. I didn't need to add, like, on, like, I think Saturday evening, like, the whole thing happened Friday night, and then Saturday evening at some point I was like, yeah, all right, fine. Like, almost like, I'm like, I may as well use it while it's there.
Yeah.
And, like, and then it was amazing, and, like, it was great, and I was like, why didn't I do this for the last 12 hours? This was a waste of a Saturday. But, like, yeah, I get what you mean. Sometimes you're just horny, and you go, yeah, that's fine. And, yeah. But you don't need to feel the need to do anything about it.
Yeah. So sometimes that's just all it is. And I'm like, meh.
Yeah. What are you going to do? But yeah, so top tip, I would say have a look at Rosé, So Divine's Glorious. But by the way, not sponsored in any way. If anyone wants to send me a free vibrator, fucking please. I'd love that. But yeah, and then yours was the Satisfier. Well, there you go. That's us talking about toys.
That's toys.
That's a good start. That's always a good start. It's my favourite thing.
Then you're in for a good time when you start talking about toys.
I don't know why. I can't navigate conversations. I don't know if it is because of the podcast or if that way of my brain led me to the podcast. But I don't think I can sit at a table where we don't end up talking about sex. Like, I don't know how, but whenever I'm there, the unspeakable
just gravitates.
Yes, just, yeah. It's like, what? Hold on. Since why do we talk about spanking now? But on the other hand, like, I'm there, so I'm like, it's very probably my fault. It's a very likely scenario that I started this. But I don't know why. I just find it important to, like, to talk about it and be open about it. And, yeah. Like, again, like with mental health and anything, just take away the stigma. And I want women and men and not gender non-binary people and trans people and everyone combined just to be able to have their fun with themselves and explore themselves, which I think is going to further our experiences with other people.
Yeah.
And that's why I like talking about it, I guess. Because it feels like, why not?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's good to be open about it.
Yeah.
When
did you discover the joys of masturbation? What did I say?
I don't know, you know.
No?
I don't know.
Wasn't it a moment where you, because this is what I was like, I was like, I don't know how orgasms work, and then someone explained it to me, because I didn't know where my clitoris was and what I was doing. And then a friend of mine was like, it's there. And I was like, I'll go home and check. And turns out it was there. And then I just couldn't do anything but masturbate for like the next 3 months. Because it's the best.
It is the best.
But yeah, I guess that's why I so vividly remember.
Yeah.
I mean, ish. I think I was 13 or 14. And then I did it like for a living, and then
for a living,
I relaxed.
Wish I could masturbate for a living.
Well, I guess you technically could.
Could you? Who's paying you?
Camming? No one's paying. That's a good point. But yeah, I guess camming is an option if you do want to masturbate for a living.
Yeah, but that's like, it's not really masturbate. It's performance.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I just want someone to send me loads of toys and be like, tell us what you think, and then we'll pay you.
It must exist, though.
It's definitely a job.
Someone has to
product tester, like, sex toy product testers definitely exist, and it's definitely a job.
Yeah.
But, you know, you just don't really come across it on, like, the Guardian website.
They were looking on the wrong websites. Where do you come across it? That is a good question.
I suppose probably they hire, I expect, like, companies would just hire through their own sites, I guess. So, like, Love Honey hires for Love Honey through their site. Yeah, I'm not sure if they hire product testers, but, like, in terms of, you know, just working for Love Honey.
Yeah.
Like, I know they have, like, a jobs and careers page.
So that's something to Google when we're out of this. I'm looking for a new job. I feel like I might have found my calling.
They're definitely looking for customer service assistants currently.
Oh.
So. You get two, like, free toys a month.
Oh!
on top of like your actual
benefits. Okay, that's a lot of free toys.
Yeah,
I'm already having visions of a beautiful future. I guess that's an option. That's an option. I'll be looking into that. Fuck. I'm sorry. I've drifted off to a land of free sex toys, and I can't come back. yeah, that's an interesting. Maybe I'll try and find out and put it in the show notes. Yeah. How you get a product test. But I guess like with chocolate or like anything fun that you can test, those jobs aren't easy to come by.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll give our opinions here, and if ever anyone wants to send us a free toy.
If anyone needs a sex toy product tester, I am available.
Yes. Yes, indeed. How do we go from here? I feel like we've peaked.
I don't know. Thank you everyone for listening. That is the end of our podcast.
Masturbators. honouring its name. What else? When you're young, I'm imagining, when did you find out that you were polyamorous? Or when did you start, I guess, identifying as polyamorous?
2 years ago?
Was it 2.5 process? Years? What was it that...
So, my journey to polyamory was... a journey, yeah.
Yeah.
Got into a relationship, like my first serious long-term relationship, with a guy who I'm still with now.
Yeah.
And you know, it was all fine. I was like, oh, so this is what relationships are like. Yay, cool, cute. And at the same time, I was watching a lot of BuzzFeed before all the BuzzFeed like OGs had left.
I was watching OG BuzzFeed.
OG BuzzFeed. And I remember watching a lot of Gabby before she left and started Just Between Us.
Do you still watch that?
I haven't in an age.
Yeah, me too. I don't even know if it still exists.
I think they're still making videos. I still feel like I'm lightly subscribed.
Lightly?
Yeah, but I don't get, like, notifications. The algorithm is
pretty fucked up as well.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. But Gabby used to talk about being polyamorous a lot. And I was like, oh, wait, what is this? What is this thing? And, like, the more I heard about it, the more I, like, looked into it. And I was like, oh, you know what? This sounds like... this makes a lot of sense. And I remember, like, breaking down to my boyfriend because we'd been drinking and I, like, we were on his sofa and I was like...
As basically I feel the like best not... breakdowns always start drinking on sofas. Like,
I feel like I'm not normal. Like, you're so normal and I'm not normal. And, like, I don't feel like I'm monogamous. And what am I going to do if I'm not monogamous? Because you're monogamous and you're so normal. And I can't live up to that. And he was like, don't worry, it's okay. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Okay.
And so I did, like, a little bit more research, a little bit more thinking. And, like, eventually I came to the, like... conclusion. I was like, okay, I'm not monogamous. Yeah. Don't know what I am, but I know that I'm not monogamous. So by the time I'd made this discovery and this decision, we were living together. And I think it was like just before we were going to bed one night, I was like, by the way, I don't think I'm monogamous. Okay, good night.
like all the good announcements.
I was like, think about that. We'll talk about it tomorrow.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And so we went to bed and went to work the next day and came home. And I was like, so, shall we talk? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, how are you feeling? And he was like, I'm okay. I think... I was angry at first, but I think I was angrier at the fact that I wasn't as angry as I thought I should be. And I was like, okay, that's fine. Like, okay, right.
That's something
we can work with this.
Yeah.
So we had like a really, really long conversation about whether we were going to continue to be monogamous or whether we were going to try being non-monogamous and how we did that and what that looked like. And going into it, I was like 100% prepared for him to be like, nope, sorry, can't do it. We're either monogamous or we can't be together. Mm-hmm. And
how
that would have sucked.
How long into your relationship was that?
This was about a year and a half.
Okay.
Yeah, and though it would have sucked, but you know, like
I guess it
would have been like unavoidable.
Yeah,
because at that point I was like, no, this is it. I'm not going to be happy in a monogamous relationship, and I'm not going to lie to him.
When you kept hearing, I guess, about polyamory, was it just that you realized that you're missing something in your life?
Or? No, and I think that's the thing about polyamory is that a lot of people think that like it's because you're not getting enough of something, but that's not necessarily what it is. So for me, for some people it is.
Yeah.
For some people it's like, you know what, I love this person, but they don't give me this specific kink, or I can't share this part of my life with them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you have other partners and you look for other partners who can provide that kind of stuff. So like, you know, if you have a dom sub kink and you're with someone who absolutely does not, you know, you find yourself a dom or a sub and you have that relationship.
Yeah.
Or if, you know, you're into superhero movies and they're like a really big part of your life. And this person's like, nope, I will never see a superhero movie. I hate them. They are the worst thing. They make me want to run away.
Yeah.
And I'll never watch one with you. And, you know, then you come across someone who's just as passionate about superhero movies as you are. And you build that relationship out of that. And that's just, it's not like the basis of your relationship. But obviously it's something that you get from this partner that
you
don't
can't
get from the other one.
Yeah.
And for some people, that is exactly how it works. You know, you find the things that you need to be happy in other people.
Yeah.
But for me, it was just a realization that I can feel multiple feelings for different people without it affecting my feelings
for
anyone
one of
else.
In
the same way that, like, when you have friends, you don't stop having friends because you find another friend.
Right, yeah.
It's not like, oh, you are the one friend in the world that I'm allowed to have, and so I will not have any other friends.
Yeah, because otherwise it, like, cheapens our friendship
or
whatever.
So I just I just came to this conclusion. I was like, I know that I can, like, have all these feelings for someone and know that it's not going to affect my relationship with anyone else, kind of thing. And that was just, that was like my personal discovery. Is that the end of the answer to the question?
I don't remember the question. I'm enjoying listening to the sun is shining and I forgot the beginning of my question. I guess. So that's when you came to that bridge with your partner.
Yeah.
And then I guess a difficult part was to explain it to him.
Yeah. So it was like explaining it to him, figuring out what that meant for us, whether it meant that, you know, we were still going to be together and try it, or if he was like completely closed off to trying it. And because I'd already like gotten to the part where I was like, I've been monogamous for a year and a half.
Yeah.
It's not working. And it's not that it's not working. It doesn't feel right.
Right.
The relationship was working. The relationship was fine.
Yeah.
But I was like, this doesn't feel right for me. And so I was, like I said, I was completely, completely prepared for him to be like, nope, can't do it.
Yeah.
And you know, I would hope we would still be in each other's lives.
Sure.
Just not, you know,
romantically.
In a monogamously attached way that we were. But he was like, okay, let's try it. And so we didn't go straight into polyamory. We had an open relationship for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I did more reading and more learning, and more talking to other people. I found a load of polyamorous groups on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Talked to people there, listened, read posts, all that kind of stuff. And through just lots of communication, and lots of education, we transitioned into being polyamorous.
Mm-hmm.
So
is the relationship, so you have relationships, different relationships with different people?
Yeah.
Does he as well?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so it's something that you've sort of opened up for him.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, like, every now and again I ask him, I was like, do you identify as polyamorous? Like, if you weren't with me, do you think you would still be polyam? And he doesn't know.
I guess it's something that your relationship brought out of him.
Yeah. So, like, I think there are some people who are, like, inherently polyamorous, and I think I'm one of those people. Then you have people who are happy in either configuration.
Yeah.
You know, they can be non-monogamous or they can be not monogamous, and they're completely happy. And then you have people who are staunchly monogamous, and they will never be able to do any kind of non-monogamous relationship. And all of those are equally valid. But, like, you know, it's just a matter of finding out where you sit.
Are on the spectrum. And you, before we started recording, you said you've just moved in with...
So we've been living together for over 2 years now. But we've just moved again.
Okay, so you've lived together.
Yeah.
Is that the first partner that you talked about?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, so this is the same partner. He's now become what I refer to as my nesting partner, which is...
That's interesting.
Yeah, okay. It's a term in polyamory that just a lot of people who... So I practice egalitarian polyamory. There's so many different kinds of polyamory. You have hierarchical polyamory, which is something that I don't mesh with at all. But it's people who have, like, a primary partner.
Yeah.
And then they'll have secondary partners or tertiary partners. And it just kind of comes, you know, in that hierarchy of needs. Right. So your first partner will always come first and your second partner will always come second.
Yeah.
And I, personally, I don't mesh with it. I don't date anyone who practices hierarchical polyamory. Because I don't think you should really be numbering your partners like that.
Right, okay.
And as far as I'm concerned, that's not what not how I want to live my life. It's not how I want to date. It's not how I want my relationships.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's unethical. But that's a whole other thing.
Sure.
But, you know, some people do it because
I mean, I guess if it works for them.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I'm not saying
the other people.
They're bad.
Yeah.
It's just hierarchical polyamory kind of puts expectations on people that they might agree to initially, but doesn't give them any room to change that. So, like, let's say you're in a hierarchical polyamorous relationship, you have a primary partner and you find a secondary partner, and you say to them, hey, I'm hierarchical, I've got a primary partner, they come first. And they're like, cool, great, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
But then 7 months later down the line, you know, they develop more feelings for you. What are you going to do? You then go, sorry, I already told you that it's like you're always going to come second. So, I mean, you knew what you were getting into. Or what happens if you then reciprocate those feelings?
Do you have to swap?
Exactly. Yeah. And then how do you go back to your primary partner? Be like, hey, you know that secondary partner that I told you about? Well, now I want them to be my primary partner.
Yeah,
can you
be
my secondary partner? And it just, in my head, it just gets a little bit sticky because you can't, anticipate people's feelings because people are changeable creatures.
So I suppose in the way that you see it, you can let relationships develop more naturally rather than giving
so
them...
egalitarian polyamory means that, you know, no one comes above anyone else.
Yeah.
And no one has any specific benefits that come with a specific relationship.
Yeah.
And a nesting partner is a term that you use to, you know, describe a partner that you live with.
Yeah.
without necessarily just being like, oh, my partner.
Yeah.
Because what if you have numerous partners?
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. And it's a bit more work, because, you know, you have to go ways of like mitigating couples privilege, which is a thing that comes in to polyamory quite often. Usually if it's an existing couple who has become polyamorous, or a couple who lives together.
Mm-hmm.
Basically it's like what the stuff that kind of comes as part of being like an established couple. So like, for example, some people in polyamorous relationships, they'll have that one person who, like, so in my situation, I have this one person who I was in a relationship with before we became polyamorous.
Yeah, yeah.
And he has met my parents. I've met his parents. We've gone to family events together.
Yeah.
But then let's say I get another partner who becomes that kind of serious.
Yeah.
Then, you know, you have to be like, when do you meet my parents? Do you get to meet my parents? Do you meet each other's parents? Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Does the partner I was with initially automatically get to go to all the family functions?
Right, so blah, navigating.
Blah. Yeah. Yeah, and just, you know, exploring that and making sure that you're not subconsciously placing one partner above the other, or giving partners of what you see to be similar serious levels in relationships.
Yeah.
Benefits that you're not giving to another partner.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that you accidentally build in a hierarchy.
Basically. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know, you've got to do a lot of that. It's pretty involved being polyamorous.
Yeah, it sounds like. I mean, I guess it sounds every relationship requires maintenance.
Yeah,
it just sounds like there are a few more things to consider.
Yeah, I think so. I think communication is important in every relationship, mm-hmm. but it's extremely important in polyamorous relationships. And like a lot of the time when I came out to my it's always really difficult to find a term. I'm also queer, so I mm-hmm. I came out in that respect, but like when I came out again to my friends as polyamorous, you get a lot of like, oh, but like, aren't you scared that, you know, they might leave you for someone else? And I'm like, well, not really, because if they were going to leave me, they're going to leave me whether I'm non-monogamous or monogamous.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, and just, yeah, being monogamous just isn't something that comes naturally to me. It comes naturally to many, many, many people.
Mm.
But I'm just not one of those people.
Do you think that's ever going to change? Or do you
think... I don't think so.
No.
I don't think so. I think... Also, like, I think it feeds into my mental state in terms of the fact that I for some reason, I think it has to do with my anxiety.
Okay.
Is I just get very uncomfortable being in one situation for a very long time.
Oh, I see. Okay, yeah.
It really stresses me out, and it makes my anxiety worse.
Yeah.
When I'm in one very specific situation that I know I'm not allowed getting to change. Getting out of
or something.
No, it's not even getting out of it. It's just, like, without that flexibility.
Oh, I see, I mean, not that, like, that meaning that you want to get out of a relationship, but just knowing what it is and it's set to be that way.
This, sort of so thing. The rigidity of it, like, I need a lot of flexibility in my life. Like, it happens with full-time jobs. Mm-hmm. I get to a point where it's like, I feel really trapped because I know that nothing's changeable. And it's really annoying because obviously with my anxiety I also need a degree of stability.
Right.
So it's like trying to reconcile the need for stability with the need for flexibility.
Yeah.
And straddling that fence and making sure that I'm getting enough of one and enough of the other. That is a sort of like a challenge.
Yeah. But I guess that's everyone living with a mental health condition, or really everyone living, you've sort of got to figure out how you like to live and what you what helps you feel happy and what helps you feel whatever it is, free, anxiety free, I guess.
Yeah.
Because I imagine to me it would be more anxiety provoking than anxiety reducing, which is, I guess, where people are different. And I find it really fascinating. You've told your parents about...
No. Okay. My parents don't even know I'm bi.
So. Oh, okay, okay. So that's another bridge to cross. But then again, my parents are
sort of like traditional Catholic, Nigerian...
Oh, okay.
Parents. So I've always said when it needs to happen, it will.
Mm-hmm.
So like if at any point I get a girlfriend...
Mm-hmm.
I'll introduce her to my parents and I'll explain the whole situation and be like, hey guys, I'm bi.
Yeah.
I'm also polyamorous.
Yeah.
Here's my girlfriend. But until then, it's just, you know, like a lot of mess that I don't really want to deal with.
And it's like you kind of have to pick your battles.
Yeah,
right?
So exactly.
Why pick one when there really is nothing to fight over in that specific moment of time?
Yeah.
So your primary.
My nesting partner.
Is still the one you would, I imagine, take to family events.
Currently, just because he's my only serious partner. But
oh, I see. Okay.
If I had another serious partner, no.
Oh, I see.
So
okay.
It would be like, maybe I'll take both of them or three of them. Like, that's the thing. You can have as many partners as, you know, you feel like you can handle. Some people have two partners and it's like, that's it.
Yeah.
Some people have seven partners. Some people have 15 partners. Like, it really depends. And then you also have, like, so many different kinds of partners. You have nesting partners. You have people you call comets, which are people you have very intense relationships with, but you don't have regular contact for any sort of reason. Mm. Maybe because it's long distance or because they're really busy.
Yeah.
And then you can practice different kinds of polyamory in term, like even within practicing like egalitarian or hierarchical polyamory, you can then also do parallel polyamory, which is where you have your relationships and none of them ever intersect with each other. Like partners don't meet each other.
Yeah.
You don't go to events together.
Yeah.
They know that each other exist, but they just don't ever come into contact.
Okay.
You have kitchen table polyamory, which is where, like, it comes from everyone being comfortable enough to sit around a kitchen table for dinner. It just means that, like, your partners all hang out with each other,
they hang out
with you, maybe you have game nights, maybe you go out together, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You have kind of polyamory where your partners maybe meet each other every once and again, but they don't really hang out with each other.
That's interesting.
Yeah, there's like so many different forms of polyamory. You have people who are solo polyamorous, which means that they'll still have multiple partners, but a lot of the time they like to retain their individual personhood. So, you know, they won't cohabitate, they won't merge bank accounts or anything like that. So they'll probably never have nesting partners. Live by themselves. And, you know, just have that kind of separate time of being themselves while also being polyamorous. I know people who are solo polyamorous who do live with some of their partners, but they have like separate rooms.
Okay.
So they live together just because London is expensive. Yeah. But like it's not like, so their finances are separate, their rooms are separate.
But I would imagine that even though I would consider myself to be monogamous, even though I think monoamorous sounds so much nicer.
Use it if you like.
I like it. Like I would need my own bedroom because I fucking can't handle people breathing at me. It's, I don't know why.
Yeah.
I need to be able to sleep in my own bed and I need to be able to have my own time. And like the bank account merging sounds fucking dramatic.
A lot of the time it is very adulty. You know, again, it's usually for people who are living together in terms of like paying bills.
Yeah.
Or if they have kids together. A lot of solo polyamorous people might not have kids together. Right. They might adopt their own kids. And
Okay, and then care for their children.
Yep, and, you know, still have them involved in their other partner's lives, but, you know, not have children with any specific partner.
How does it work in polyamory if you want to have a partner? Would that have to become your nesting partner, or how does it work? Or is it, I guess it's different for everyone, right?
How do you mean?
If you want to have children,
yeah.
So either.
Oh, yeah. Again, it just depends.
It depends on what kind of polyamory
could be your nesting partner. You could have a nesting partner, but you don't want to have kids with them.
Yeah,
have kids with someone else. For some people, obviously, it's easier to have kids with your nesting partner.
Yeah.
Because you're already living together. If you want, you know, both parents to be under the same roof.
Yeah.
It's not something that people necessarily have to do. You can co-parent. And all of that jazz. But yeah, it really depends. It varies from person to person. And it varies from relationship to relationship. Could be that your nesting partner doesn't ever want to have kids.
Yeah.
It could be that they definitely want to have kids, but you don't want to have kids.
Is there a specific kind of polyamory that speaks to you?
So, like I say, I'm egalitarian, and I lean towards kitchen table polyamory.
Yeah, that sounds quite nice, actually.
Yeah.
People get along and know each other. Would that then mean that your partner's partner would also be at that kitchen table?
So they don't always have to be there. It just kind of that refers to you would be comfortable being there. And you can call your partner's partner a metamor.
Metamor. A metamor.
Metamor, or meta for short. So like a lot of times when polyamorous people are talking to other polyamorous people, they'd be like, oh yeah, I hung out with my meta the other day.
Oh, blah, blah, I blah, see, blah, okay.
Blah. It's just, you know, easier than say my partner's partner.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you? My partner's other partner.
Yeah. That's really cool.
And some people have really close relationships with their metas. Some people never want to see their metas.
Yeah.
I
guess that's a very personal choice as well. I don't know on what that depends. I guess on how you personally... on personal choice.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I didn't know any of those things. Like, I think because it's just never spoken to me. Like, I've heard it, and I've sort of looked into... Like, I think also BuzzFeed and Gabby talking about it. Like, that's why I love people who are so open, because she's always been very open.
Yeah.
About everything. And that makes it so easy to go, oh, that's interesting, maybe I'll have a look into this, rather than you having to look into the darkest corners of the internet.
Yeah.
Going, what's this? But it's being brought to light as the normal thing that it is.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it never spoke to me, so I guess I never researched it.
Yeah.
I sort of didn't see the
yeah.
the point. But then I also think people can change and things can change, and it always depends on... Like, I think never say never, as in, you know, you don't know how you feel 10 years down the line.
Yeah.
Also, I've never had a monogamous relationship either, because I'm emotionally fuck-hucked. so, like, what the fuck do I know?
I didn't know I was polyamorous until I got into that monogamous relationship. So,
yeah, it might be surprises down that way. Interesting. Where else do we go? So you're queer.
I'm queer.
Any thoughts on that?
That is the vaguest question I think I've ever heard.
I'm a professional.
Any thoughts on queer? Yes.
I guess.
I think the accurate answer would be.
Can't elaborate.
What's the question?
Let's start by going. When did you start identifying as queer?
Once I went to uni. So I came out officially in my third year.
Mm-hmm. How old were you?
20. I was 20. Yeah. 20. Yeah. And so, like I say, my parents are traditional Nigerian Catholics.
Yeah.
And, like, I'd always been very open about the fact that I didn't agree with sort of the traditional Catholic teachings of, you know...
Leviticus? What?
I didn't expect you to say a specific Bible Bible verse. you know, it being one woman and one man.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
And I imagine potentially, I don't know if Nigeria is a country where being gay is still illegal.
Yeah, it's not. I'm not sure if it's illegal, but it's definitely not, like...
easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was, like, you know, never even something I really considered as a possibility.
Yeah.
But, you know, you look back with hindsight and you think of, like, your friends who were girls who you, like, really, really, really loved. And you're
she's so
great.
Yeah.
And obviously, like, it gets to the point where you're like, oh, I fancied her. Right, I get it.
Yeah, like, whenever I had a crush, or like, I liked an actress, and now I'm like, oh no, I totally had a crush.
Yeah.
Like, Eliza Dushku in Bring It On.
Oh, yeah.
That I was like, she's great. And now I'm like, oh no, she's, like, my butch dream girl. Like,
yeah.
She was badass. Yeah, like Angelina Jolie.
I want to be with you. I want to be you. And then it's like, I realize I wanted to be with you.
Exactly.
Got it.
But
yeah, you don't, when I was younger, it wasn't really anything that, you know, was even sort of on my radar of,
yeah,
even though, like, I look back and I remember I used to, like, practice kissing with one of my friends.
Okay.
And we were just like, you know, it's just practice.
It's harmless.
But that's super gay. Of course it was. Looking back on it now. But yeah, and so then we lived in America for a while.
Yeah.
And then we moved back. And when we moved back, we moved to a small village in the East Midlands.
I imagine that's a bit difficult.
You know, wasn't big on the queer scene. Yeah. So again, wasn't really something that I realised.
So you can't really explore that, I suppose, yeah, if it's not being presented to you.
Exactly. And then I went to uni and I came down to London. And I was like, wow, look at all this non-straight
queerness
stuff. I was like, oh, people are so happy being themselves. I'm so happy for them. This is, wow, it's so freeing. And then eventually just kind of went, wait, is that me?
Mm.
Am I that? Oh, my God.
So queer.
And so we came to this realization that I was bi or pan or whatever. I use them interchangeably depending on who I'm talking to.
Especially because I don't want to... Like, when I know someone's mildly ignorant, I'm not going to explain to them what pansexual means.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I don't even want to discuss gender with them in the first place.
It's a whole tang.
And, like, the joke, oh, so you're interested in pans, like, the next person who says that is just going to, I'll take a pan and hit them in the dick.
Like, it's... You're so individual, I've never heard that joke
exactly
before.
It's like, how do you think... How clever do you think you have, like, oh,
yeah,
bad jokes, bad, yeah, like, say something funny, I don't care, like, make
or,
jokes
like,
about
the
it.
The first person to say that, like,
on planet
great,
Earth ever.
You know, congratulations. Yeah. But it's a very obvious choice now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and so I came out via a blog post.
I think I've never... Have I come out? I've come out to a couple of people at the beginning. Mm. But I've never really... And then I came out to my mother at some point. But it's never been, like, a big deal, I guess. I mean, the thing is, when I was 16, I thought I was bisexual. I tried telling my mother. Her response was, ooh, why would you tell me? Which is not ideal. At all. then I parked that, and then because I didn't date anyone anyway, I do think it did like lead to issues with. There was definitely a girl I had a crush on that was conflicted about, and like that probably didn't help.
Yeah.
But I had a lot of mental health issues and other shit to take care of that. It was sort of irrelevant.
Sure.
Like you said, if it happens, then you can bring it to the table, and if it doesn't, then why? And then I came out later, the first was, I think, a friend. In London, I've never come out. I was just queer.
Mm.
And I would just present that to people who meet me, because I just like to weed out idiots. And then in Germany, I came out to one friend of mine, and I remember it helping him a lot coming out as gay.
Yeah.
That I was open with him about coming out as bi, and I think, except his partners, I was the first person he came out to.
Yeah.
So I always found it very important to be out, but thankfully, I guess, I mean, it was a small Bavarian, quite Christian village. It's a 60,000 city, 60,000 people city that feels like a village.
Sure.
And, like, I'm sure being gay is still, like, not the most common thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's, I think, one gay bar, as far as I'm aware.
Well.
But I think it's a very different kind of pressure than I imagine you felt under. Or I don't know if you did at all.
Mm. I don't know. I don't know that I really felt under pressure, because I didn't know at the time.
Yeah, fair enough.
I might have if I had known that, you know, that's what I was.
Yeah.
But I think because I didn't know, I just didn't really know better. I didn't know anything else. And then by the time I figured it out, I was already, like, in a place where I could be open about it. Which was very, it was lucky for me that I figured out at that time. Or that I was in that sort of position when I figured it out.
Yes, and that you were in a cult, in a... surrounded by queer culture.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, that's why I love London. And I think that's why I can imagine that it's harder for people to live in rural areas or to live outside of London. Because I think the bubble of London makes it feel like the world is a lot more progressive than it might be. And... because you've already talked about, I guess, your Nigerian upbringing in a way, and this is the awkward segue into your your identity as a black woman.
Because
you said that's something that feels very integral to you, I guess, obviously.
Yeah, it just kind of is, because that's what I am.
Yeah.
I remember when I was younger, I used to draw, self-portraits of myself and show them to people, and people were like, who is this? And like, oh, it's me. And they wouldn't know, because I drew myself as white with blonde hair.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Did you notice that?
I knew it didn't look like me. Okay. But, like, I feel like that's just what I wanted to be
when
I was younger.
Yeah.
I had a lot of... very pretty white friends, and I was just like, that's what you have to be to be happy. You have to be white and you have to be blonde. And so I had like a really weird sort of disconnect with myself. I think also because I was overweight as a kid. I'm still overweight now, but like less so. I was quite overweight when I was younger. And I just didn't feel comfortable in my body.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, my skin and my hair was just another part of
that wasn't
why I didn't
the world
feel comfortable.
Told you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Especially because, like, you know, you watch TV and you don't see people like yourself on TV.
Mm.
Or you go
was
to
that
movies.
When you were in America? Because I imagine that potentially
both.
There isn't... When? How old are you?
I'm 23 now. I was in America from when I was 4 until when I was 11.
Because I just wonder when, like... Because at some point in the 90s, there were quite a few sitcoms and stuff. But I think that might have... That weirdly passed, and then it became super white again.
Mm. There were, like... I remember when That's a Raven came out on Disney Channel yeah. because I was like, oh my god, it's a black girl, I'm so excited.
So it was a like, new yeah. at that time it had become really rare
and then like you go back and you have like Sister and My Wife and Kids and all of that kind of stuff, but that was not when I was growing up.
No, that was I think later, maybe even
My Wife and Kids I think was before. It was around the same time, but I wouldn't have been of the age range to watch it and be entertained by it was like early noughties.
Yeah, I guess specifically for kids. Wasn't anything
exactly. So that's So Raven started coming out when I was maybe 8, and I can't remember whether it was before Cheetah Girls or after Cheetah Girls, but I was like, Raven, blah blah blah, and I loved Cheetah Girls, and I loved That's a Raven, and I was like, this is like people who look like me, and it's really great.
And I imagine that has quite an impact, because other children grow up just seeing themselves on telly. And I talk as someone who, like, I'm white, other ethnicity-wise, no clue. My dad's from Egypt, and I'm a bit olive-y, but growing up in a Bavarian village, I didn't feel particularly white, which is hilarious. Mm. But, like, we had 2 black families in the 60,000 people town.
Mm.
Like, everyone was aware of, because, like, it was a weird, exotic thing that no one's ever seen before, which you don't really get when you live in London or somewhere bigger. Yeah. But actually, then you start understanding the mentality and where the problematics come from, because just some places aren't very diverse, and we had a lot of Turkish families, because, you know, that sort of the immigrants that were more I don't know, there were more of them. And I looked more Turkish, but the Turkish kids were sort of, in quotation marks, obviously not German, and they didn't look like the German kids on television, and they didn't look like, I didn't look like the kids on TV. I had a bit more dark skin, I had darker eyes, I had curls, which, unless they were like these blonde sort of Goldilocks things, no one had.
Mm-hmm.
And like that, but still I sort of looked like them. And so I had a bit of representation. But I imagine it's quite difficult if there really is basically nothing until you're 8 years old. Because obviously you draw yourself blonde and white, because that's the, I mean, you have no mirror to show you that you're fine or whatever it is.
Yeah.
That you want to see as a kid.
Yeah.
Did that actively impact you, or do you think that's something you realised afterwards?
I think it's something I realised afterwards. I don't think I even realised I was doing it as a kid.
Yeah.
I was just like, yeah, of course, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it's been sort of like a journey of, like, getting more comfortable with myself. And, like, even a very small thing is that until recently, my hair was never natural. So, like, my hair was always relaxed from as early as I can remember, because that's what my mum did.
Relaxed, is that a chemical?
Yeah, it's chemically straightened.
Okay.
So, yeah, you put it on your... Generally, Afro-Caribbeans use it on, you know, kinky hair.
Yeah.
You do a relaxing process...
That sounds quite harsh on the hair, though.
It is,
on
your
head.
Yeah, like, you can get scalp burns if you leave it on too long.
Oh, wow, okay.
But
I guess, like, it's just something you do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was actually in the salon earlier on last week to get my hair done. And there was this little girl, maybe about 7 or 8 years old.
Yeah.
Lots of beautiful, beautiful hair. And, you know, they were, like, straightening it so they could, I think she was putting them into, like, small, small braids.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, she's just sobbing her eyes out.
Because it hurts?
Yeah, because it hurts. Oh, and okay. I just realised that, you know, you, as a black woman, you get conditioned to put yourself through this pain to make yourself more presentable in a Eurocentric world.
Yes, yeah. That's what I always find really sad when I... because it starts so young, and like, and I think the thing isn't even that the message, like, the message is so subliminal, and so ingrained in the adults, like, Because I remember, like, because there are people talking about their kinky hair, like, you know, it's not, it doesn't look good. And, like, it's just, that's, like, that's what they think it is. Like, there is no maybe. There's just, you know, I wear wigs, or they got, like, think braids or whatever it is, or they straighten it. Mm. And it's not, like, an option, like, white people can straighten their hair or not straighten their hair, mm-hmm. or do whatever, because it's just a style choice. But in that, for people with Afro, what did you say, Afro-Caribbean hair or Afro, what's it called?
Well, so like, it depends. So you have different kinds of hair types, and it stems from 1A to 4C.
Okay.
And it just talks about your curl pattern.
How,
so I have 4C okay. hair, which is tight coils.
Tiny curls. Oh, cool. That's interesting. I didn't realize there was... I mean, I guess it makes sense that there's a scale from small to bigger.
Yeah, but yeah, so if your hair is thin and very straight naturally,
yeah,
tends to be 1A. The thicker and curlier and coilier it gets, the further down the scale you get.
Interesting.
So,
but yeah, like... It's just a normal thing that you get it straightened or you get it chemically straightened.
Yeah.
And, like, it just makes me sad that it's so ingrained and that, like... And then that you still hear that little people... that children are sent away from school because of their black hair.
Yeah, in my school...
Like, what the...
We had a guy with an afro.
Yeah.
And he got made to shave off because it was an extreme hairstyle and therefore was against the uniform code.
Exactly.
How is it an extreme hairstyle? It's his hair. It's
growing out of his head.
Yeah.
That's not extreme, is it?
Exactly.
It's like the opposite of extreme.
Yeah. It's like he hasn't done anything to it in terms of...
Yeah.
Like, apart from just taking care of it.
I guess brushing it.
Yeah, exactly.
Afro-ear. I don't know what...
You don't really brush it. You pick it with an afro comb. That's the thing as well, is that a lot of the time you're not really taught how to take care of your hair. So you have to do so many different things to your hair that you don't realize that you have to do, because no one ever teaches you it. So I went on like a really long hair journey.
Yeah.
Starting about 3 years ago. Because I ended up getting back to natural hair.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the time people transition from having relaxed hair or any sort of like chemically altered hair to having natural hair.
Yeah.
And you can do that by either chopping it all off, which is called the big chop in our circles, or you can wait for your hair to just slowly transition itself.
So it does...
Yeah, you have to renew it all the time.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
So if you wash it or whatever, like, I don't know what the chemicals do. It changes the hair structure, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it essentially loosens your curl pattern so that it's not there anymore.
Yeah.
But it wears off to an extent. So, you know, you have to re-relax it.
Would it go back to the natural state?
Eventually.
Yeah, okay.
So that's what happened with mine. My hair just... I'd changed protective styles repeatedly, so I was like braids and then crochet braids and then braids and mm-hmm. the crochet braids and blah blah blah, and I just didn't have time to relax it. And then I was like, oh well, I've basically started transitioning, so mm-hmm. I might as well just keep doing that.
Okay. Yeah. So it was more of a coincidence.
Yeah, it wasn't really a decision until I was like, well, I've come this far without relaxing it, so I might as well transition. And then that was a whole thing of like, right, so what do I need to take care of my hair? And it's difficult, especially in England, because a lot of the brands that cater to 4C hair, which is the kind of hair that I have, mm-hmm. are based in America. And you don't hear too much about
them. So if you go to an... black hair barbershop or something, they wouldn't have those products?
Well, it depends. So they have products, but like, again, they, even in black hair shops, they're generally working
with relaxing them rather than...
No. More just like across the spectrum of 4 hair. So you have 4A, 4B and 4C.
Oh.
And even though there's only 3 tiers, there's a really big difference between having 4B hair and having 4C hair.
Okay.
So like, even though in general products will work, there are specific products that you need to use.
Oh, I understand. Okay. And the market is bigger in America, I guess.
Yeah. And there's not that much knowledge here of what it is.
Yeah.
So I went through like YouTube a lot, and it was mostly American YouTubers. I went through all their product recommendations, and it's all like, oh, this is stuff I got from Sally's, and you which is and you can get it, but like the importing charges are ridiculous.
Yeah.
So then it's like, can I find something that is like this, that is here, that is like less expensive? You learn things like you have to stay away from sulfates and shampoos, which...
What do they do?
They mess with your curl pattern and they dry out your hair.
Oh.
So essentially, if you have 4C hair, you need to stay away from sulfates because they suck all the moisture out. So basically,
curly hair, because my hair is pretty dry, so I imagine the curlier you get, the drier your hair gets. Or
not necessarily. You can have low porosity or high porosity hair. And if anyone wants to figure out whether you have low porosity or high porosity hair, you can do a very easy test at home.
Okay.
You take a strand of your hair,
and
put it in some water.
Yeah.
If it sinks really quickly, then it's high porosity, which means it takes in water easily.
Okay.
If it stays afloat, then it's low porosity.
And what's the difference? What's low porosity is?
It just it affects how your hair retains moisture.
Oh, I see. So which one retains moisture better than
high porosity? No. Is that the other way around? Low porosity.
Okay.
I'm being silly. Low porosity, I believe.
So the sinking hair. No, the floating hair.
Let me double check.
Okay, sorry.
No.
Because I'm like, I'm going to do this test right now.
I have not slept properly in so long.
Also, the sun is out, as we've already said.
Also, the sun is out. let me just double check. Yeah, that's what it is. So, like, if it sinks quickly, it's high porosity. If it stays afloat, then it's low porosity. And if it's high porosity, it absorbs water really quickly, but it also loses water really quickly.
Okay.
Whereas if it's low porosity, it absorbs it slower, but it retains it better.
Interesting.
And then, especially for like black hair, it depends, like that affects how you moisturize it. So you either do the LCO method or the LOC method. And L stands for lotion, C stands for cream, O stands for oil.
Oh.
No, LL stands for liquid, so like water. So you wash your hair, and then you either put oil in it and then cream, or you put cream in it, then oil, depending on whether
on
you have high
you trap
or low porosity. Yeah, so if you have high porosity hair, you do oil and then cream. So you use a moisturizing oil, so it sucks in that oil, and then you use the cream on top of that to stop you from losing it.
Like a cream would be like a... curl cream or
something? Like a curl cream or a moisturizing cream, shea butter, anything like that. Whereas like you would use like avocado oil or coconut oil or jojoba oil, depending on, you know, what effect you want your hair to have.
Yeah.
And if it's low porosity, then you do the cream and then the oil.
Okay.
So, like, it's all of these kind of things that no one really teaches you.
Yeah.
That you have to figure out. And it's like, oh, God, what kind of porosity is my hair? What kind of oil do I use? Because each oil has different properties. It's like, do you want a moisturizing oil? Do you want a length oil? Do you want a restorative oil?
My mind is blown. I thought oil is oil and cream is cream. And you put stuff in there when you feel like you need it.
Nope, not at all. that's, you know, stuff that you don't really get told.
Yeah, it would, I guess, come from your parents if they wouldn't have been conditioned to treat their hair.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that, like, you know, if and when I have kids, the knowledge that I now have of my hair will help me, you know, pass on to them how to take care of their hair.
And then they can make a choice.
Exactly.
Rather than feel obliged.
Yeah, absolutely.
To do certain things.
Absolutely.
And has that changed? Because sometimes I think it takes an outside physical change to provoke inner change? Not always. Has it made you change how you relate to yourself or your heritage?
I think I'm a lot more at home with my hair now.
Yeah.
I try to be good to it so that it will be good to me.
Yeah.
And it's still a journey. It's still stuff that I'm, like, you know, still learning about as that mix-up between high porosity and low porosity will indicate. But
well,
you've
made your first steps. You're getting there.
Yeah, yeah. I bleached my hair to dye it.
Okay.
About 8 months ago for the first time.
Okay.
And bleaching my hair was always something that, you know, I was never going to do because I was like, bleach is going to be terrible for my hair, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And then I was like, but I really want to colour my hair, but I don't want to have to rely on something else. I want to use my actual hair. And right. I came across people, lots of black women with the same kind of, like, 4C hair as me, who had all these bright, vibrant colours in their hair, and their hair was still healthy. And I was like, okay, so it's possible.
Yeah.
This shows that it's possible. So then I went and did more research on how you bleach 4C hair and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, because you see fails online. You see, rarely you see.
Yeah, and also it's hardly ever 4C hair.
Oh, it's hardly because ever. I guess, I imagine that's the hardest hair to bleach, or does it depend on?
It depends on the porosity of your hair.
Oh, I see, okay.
Because
so it's more complicated.
Obviously,
than
the bleach strip, and like, a bleach has all these different effects on your hair.
Yeah.
So obviously it dries it out, but it also loosens your curl pattern, just because of the chemicals in it. So again, it was another thing. I flocked to YouTube,
watched
a load of videos. Again, all the I couldn't find one single British YouTuber who had 4C hair and had bleached it.
Yeah.
I found British YouTubers with 4B hair, British YouTubers with 4A hair, loads of white British YouTubers with, you know, varying hair from 1 to 2. I found American YouTubers with kinds of 4 hair. I found American 4C hair YouTubers, mm-hmm. but I couldn't find one British YouTuber with 4C mm-hmm. hair.
Is it a rare
hair? It's not rare hair. No, I think it's just in England, no one really knows what to do with it.
Okay.
So you just get it braided, or
I see. Okay.
Or you relax it.
I always thought that braiding not a cultural thing, or do you think that was something that was done in order to not have offensive, in quotation marks, hair?
I think
in
both
European.
It's definitely cultural, but also braids tend to be looked on better than
if you have your natural
Afro kinky hair.
Fair enough. Okay.
Because that seems unprofessional. So
in quotation marks.
Yeah, very heavy quotation marks if you can't hear it dripping from my voice. But yeah, I think there's a load of factors that go into it. And also, I think a lot of people are, especially if you are natural, you've either gone through a very long process of becoming natural, or you've been maintaining your natural hair for that long.
Right.
So if you've been putting that much effort into making sure your hair is healthy and nourished.
Yeah.
You don't want to then go ahead and put chemicals on it and end up
potentially
losing all of that work.
Yeah.
So I just... you know, and not everyone is a YouTuber, so, you know, people bleach and
some people do
dye their
in private
hair. Exactly.
Believe it or not.
So I finally, like, figured out how I was gonna do it, and I filmed it, so I'm gonna put it together and put it on YouTube for other British 4C
That's
gals
amazing.
In case they wanna bleach it in the future. But yeah, so that was another sort of step of being like, well, what does my hair need from me for it to give me what I want from it?
Yeah. Okay, cool. We've got a few minutes left. Is there any parting wisdoms? I guess we've touched on mental health. What I like to end with sometimes is self-care tips, self-pampering tips. Is anything on a down day, or just in general, I guess, to keep yourself happy?
Yeah, I actually wrote a whole article about self-care because I think self-care, like, is so important, but can very easily be made to be, like, you know, something that only people can do with money.
Yes.
Because people are always like, oh, you know, when I need some self-care, I go on a nice shopping day, yeah, and I go get my nails done.
Or I have a massage that costs, like, 80 quid an hour.
Exactly. And it's like, that's great. Yeah. I'm glad that you find things that work for you. But, you know, not everyone has that luxury.
Yeah.
Especially if, you know, you're dealing with mental health issues that require a bit more finessed self-care rather than, you know, just general self-care for grounding yourself being at home with yourself. Sometimes you need something a bit more specific.
Yeah.
And I've always said personally, and within that article, was that you don't need to look at it as an umbrella term. Look at it as something very specific to you. Don't sort of compare your self-care with other people's self-care.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if you're stressed out about money and you need some self-care, do free self-care. On days like this, when it's nice and sunny outside, if you like the sun, go outside, soak up the sun, read a book, take some time for yourself.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have, like, I have got, obviously, my mental conditions. No, you're fine. I have friends with loads of mental conditions. That means that sometimes, you know, you can't leave the house.
Yeah.
And you can still, you can do self-care, even if you have none of the energy. So it's like, if you can't have a shower, wash your face.
Yeah.
If you can't cook, order some food.
Yeah.
And don't, like, beat yourself up for that.
Yeah.
Eating something, even if it's rubbish, is better than eating nothing.
Sure.
Bring.
I suppose, yeah, appreciate the little steps.
Yeah, yeah. Do any, like, my self-care tips are always do what is within your ability to do.
Yeah.
And don't feel guilty for doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So if it means you have to take a day off work, take a day off work and don't feel guilty for doing that. If it means that you you have a little bit of extra money, but you want to use it to order a pizza and don't feel guilty for doing that.
Yeah.
Listen to yourself, listen to your body, listen to your heart, listen to your mind.
Yeah.
Listen to what you are subconsciously telling yourself that you need.
Yeah.
Or that you want, and take that on board. Obviously, like, take it with a pinch of salt. Like, if you don't have any money, don't order £100 worth of takeaway. Yeah. But if, you know, you've got a little bit of money around, get a Mackey's.
Get a KFC.
If that's what you want, do it.
Yeah.
If you don't want to spend any money, you just want to sit on your sofa all day and watch TV, do it.
Yeah.
If you have, like, you know, social commitments that you don't feel up to or that you think are going to detriment to your to your stability at the time, cancel them.
Yeah.
And don't feel guilty doing that.
Yeah.
I think it's really easy to, like, feel guilt for doing what it is that you need to do to function.
Yeah.
Especially if it involves having to cancel on other people. But you have to remember that you need what you need and you are important. And hopefully the people that you're spending time with will understand that.
Yeah.
If they don't spend time with them.
I think so. Like, I think people who get angry at people with mental health conditions, like, I get it to an extent, because I think, for example, depression and anxiety, I think, can be, at least to me, it can feel like they're very selfish sicknesses or illnesses, because they just mean that sometimes you need a bit more time for yourself, and so you do cancel on plans last minute. And, but I think people who care for you and understand you and listen will be fine, you know, with knowing that you're taking care of yourself.
Yeah.
And I actually find it really important what you said about not feeling guilty, because I think I've taken mental health days at work, and because we live in a society where it's like, it's not acceptable to be sick in the first place, and then if you don't have something to show for it.
Yeah, like a physical ailment.
Yeah, it's even worse. And so I've been made to feel guilty, and it's definitely, like, made it worse. Like, you call in sick for anxiety reasons, and then sort of the response you get makes you have more anxiety, which isn't ideal. So I think you just need to, being caring for yourself and sort of explaining to yourself that other people don't need to understand this for it to be real is really important.
And I can't, not even recommend, I can't,
stress.
Yeah, enough the importance of, if you are in a position to do so, letting your employers know that you have mental health conditions if you do. It's one of the things that I never used to tell people, because it was like, well, it's not really physical. I should be able to just deal with it myself.
Mm.
I hadn't started therapy. I didn't really know how to freaking deal with stuff. Mm. But like, it's one of the things nowadays that I try to be as upfront with about as possible.
Yeah.
Whenever I get a new job or a new position or whatever, I'm like, just so you know, I do have mental health conditions.
Do you say that right at the get-go?
Not at the interview.
Right.
But I'll say it once I get the job.
Right,
It, like, during induction or our first, like, one-to-one with my line manager or whatever. Or even if it's just, like, stepping into HR, depending on the size of your company.
Yeah.
I've always done it with my line managers, because, you know, I've never really had a relationship with HR.
Right.
And it's just so you know, I have mental health conditions. I'm usually fine at policing them myself.
Yeah.
But it does mean that sometimes I might need to take a mental health day.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And if you establish that at the beginning, it makes it a lot easier down the line to be like, hey, remember
what we discussed
when I started? I need to take a mental health day today. And it can be really difficult to bring yourself to say it, because I think, especially when you have mental health conditions, you're really conditioned to believe that you should deal with it, like, by yourself.
Yeah.
And, you know, you'll be able to do it, and it's not, like, you shouldn't really have to take time off for stuff, but you do.
Yeah.
As a person, you just do. And, you know, it's just really, it's a lot easier to get that expectation out there early.
That's true. I guess I would always be afraid that, like, I wouldn't get through probation or something, because they'd be worried that I called in sick too much.
Yeah.
But I guess...
But the thing is, like, you have to think of it, like, if someone has, like, endometriosis or something.
Yeah.
And they get a new job and they have a week of flare-up and they can't go into work.
Yeah. They have to be,
as long as they manage their expectations.
Yeah,
it's literally illegal for someone to fire you because of that. So, like, if you have mental health days, it's still health.
Yeah,
and I think it's really difficult to forget that it is illegal. So they can fire you if they want, but it's illegal.
Yeah,
yeah,
fair enough.
And just a quick tip, threatening legal action is always a really good way.
I've noticed that people get whatever the fuck they want in HR, mm-hmm. as soon as they come with lawyers.
Yep, as long as you know what you're talking about. Yeah. And, like, if anyone with mental health conditions is having issues, like, with their work and wants to talk, let me know. I got some good recommendations and stuff. Yeah.
I'm going to take you up on that.
Yeah, but, like, if your workplace is doing anything that is impeding your health, as someone with mental health conditions... you are allowed to take that time off, and if they do threaten to fire you, it's illegal and you can threaten legal action. And as soon as you start threatening legal action, no one really wants to deal with that kind of that mess. Yeah,
it's kind of like a union thing, like, at some point.
Yeah, exactly.
Sort of safe. That's really good. And that would be a sad length to have to go to, but I think that is part of self-care, to understand what your rights are and what you deserve, and that your mental health is just as important as your physical health.
Absolutely.
And that you should be able to take time to take care of it.
And as soon as possible, if you can get yourself out of that situation, the better. Obviously, you can't... Not everyone can just quit a job.
Yeah.
Like, the last job that I left, I couldn't just quit. I had to, you know, put...
give them
bumpers in place and just be I have to make sure that I have a job to go to.
Oh yeah, for your own security.
Some people who are just like, oh, just quit, and then whenever something comes up, I'll just get that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was like, right, I know if I just quit, it's just going to make my anxiety worse. Yeah. So I need to make sure I can afford this and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
and I've got
a
job and blah, 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 blah. But if you can start putting those sort of catch-alls into place so you can consider leaving.
Yeah.
I highly recommend doing so.
That's a very good tip. Thank you very much.
That's me. Those are my self-care tips.
That was a lovely way to end the show. And thank you for being so honest. It was very fun to talk to you.
It was good to have this conversation.
Yeah, we should do it again. Check back in a few months.
Yes, absolutely.
And guys, thank you so much for listening to Masturbators.
Voyeuristic.
Thank you for your thanks for being here. Like you're listening from weird places all over the world, and I'm very, very happy. And if you like what you hear, let me know. I'm always here at Masturbators Podcast or masturbatorspodcast@gmail.com if I can get it out. So if you want to be on the show, if you've got tips, questions or anything, get in touch. If you could, please rate the podcast and write a review. It honestly helps get the word out there and bumping the, I don't know, visibility algorithms, whatever. Thank you guys so much. I'll hear you next week. Now the outro of the wonderful Jacob Welding, who's also, well, it's the intro and the outro, isn't it? So that's that. My outro's legendary. I'll see you next week. Goodbye.